The new strains of the coronavirus, enforcing the pandemic rules, and the reputation of South Beach. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. There are more cases of the UK COVID-19 mutation in Florida than any other state, and more cases in South Florida than any other place in the state. So what do we know and not know about this version of the germ spreading? It is a more contagious variety of the virus. So what about following rules like wearing masks, staying at least 6 feet apart, and limiting crowds at restaurants and bars? How are the rules being enforced or ignored? Plus, some in Miami Beach want to change the reputation of South Beach. A shooting that hurt 3 people last weekend has been met with the promise of more police on the streets. Our program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public radio. By next month, the UK strain of COVID-19 may be the predominant version of the virus circulating across the country. That's the prediction by infection models from the Centers for Disease Control. Officially, the CDC has 611 reported cases of the mutated virus in 33 states. There are more cases in Florida than any other state and more cases in South Florida than any other part of the state. So this makes our region the hotspot for this more highly contagious strain and a center for research. The so-called UK strain is just one of the mutations of COVID-19. There is a mutation that was found first in South Africa and one first found in Brazil. The biological changes come as the daily infection rates are just below 10% in our region, and the number of people getting their first dose of vaccine continues falling compared to a week ago. Through Wednesday of this week, only half the number of people in Florida received their first dose compared to the previous week. Fewer than 50,000 first doses were given according to state data in the previous 7 days through Wednesday. So what do you want to know about these new virus mutations? That's where we're going to start the South Florida Roundup this week. How different are they from the version that we've been fighting for a year now? Are they more dangerous? Will vaccines protect against them? 800-743-WLRN. Toll-free phone number here live on this Friday, 800-743-9576. 800-743-9576. Also on Twitter, at WLRN is our handle. Dr. David Andrews is with us, professor of clinical pathology at the University of Miami. Dr. Andrews, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure.
How prevalent is this UK strain here in South Florida?
Well, we don't know a real prevalence rate yet. I think the we are detecting it. What you said at the outset is true. It's been identified and it's turning up. I don't think we have enough data to come up with a prevalence rate. We are seeing it, and we are seeing it increase. But that's where we stand right now. It's hard to apply statistical models to say exactly how prevalent it is.
We have a relatively few number of cases confirmed by the CDC, 611 nationwide. Is it your sense that South Florida is a hotspot in this outbreak?
Well, the CDC has a difficult job. I think that data is based on 33 states reporting. I'm
correct.
Familiar with the website, and it is inevitably going to be an underrepresentation. And I think the general pattern is that for whatever reason, Florida does seem to be reporting the most numbers. And again, as the ability to detect these strains spreads, that is for the laboratories to be able to detect it, we're going to get better data. We have set this up at the University of Miami, and we're screening for the presence. Right now, we're doing active screening for the presence of what is being referred to as the UK variant with assays, and we are turning it up in clinical samples. And I might add, recently, the president of the University of Miami, Dr. Frank, mentioned that it's also present in the student population. So it is present in Miami-Dade County.
And so So the university is saying they have found it amongst the student population on campus in Coral Gables?
Yes, that's right. Dr. Frank just sent out a broad email distribution describing that. But everything you said at the outset is true. The CDC, I think, is predicting accurately that it's going to grow in prevalence here in the United States. This happened in the UK, and it's reasonable to project that that's going to happen here. The rate, we don't know, of course.
Yeah, Dr. Anders, I want to ask you about the testing, the sampling, vaccine effectiveness on this. But how does this UK strain differ from the version of the virus that we've been battling for 12, 13 months now?
Well, first of all, the term UK strain, I've been speaking with our other experts here, and in fact, Dr. Nimer, who's the head of our cancer center, and he's pointed out appropriately that these are the origins, and you mentioned that at the outset, whether it be the origin, the UK strain is at its origin, or the South African strain, or the Brazilian strain, but also they all have one thing in common that we're most concerned about, and that is being able to escape the protection that is afforded by the vaccines. To date, it looks like there may be some partial reduction in efficacy of these vaccines, but the vaccines still provide partial and significant protection.
Let me make sure I understand what you're telling us there, Dr. Andrews, regarding the current vaccines, the Pfizer two-dose vaccine and the Moderna two-dose vaccine. Those are the ones that have gotten the emergency authorization here in the United States so far, that those vaccines are providing some level of protection against this new so-called UK strain. Do we know what level of protection it provides?
So I'm not a vaccinologist, so
yeah.
I can't provide
You're a pathologist, understood.
Yes, I can't. Yeah. But look, the data is so far encouraging in that it provides partial protection. What these particular variations have in common. They have changes in the structural protein on the virus that is the target of the vaccines, the famous spike protein.
Yeah.
And that's the concern.
We're speaking with Dr. David Andrews, professor of clinical pathology at the University of Miami. A little bit of a public biology class here as we're talking about the UK strain of COVID-19. Florida has more confirmed cases of this strain of the coronavirus than any other state in the United States. And South Florida has more of those cases in Florida than any other region. What are your questions about this new mutation? 800-743-WLRN, or questions about the more predominant, at least for now, conventional coronavirus germ. 800-743-9576 is our phone number. Dr. Andrews, does this UK strain present more or less of a risk of serious illness?
At this time, I don't think it's conclusive that it causes more. So, the three things we're worried about with genetic variants right now in the virus, one is that it causes worse disease. There's no substantial evidence, although there's a hint of evidence coming from England that this one might cause worse disease. But let's just assume for now we don't know that any of these cause worse disease. The second one is that is what we're talking about, increase transmissibility. The rate at which the virus spreads, and there are some mechanisms, and it does appear that all three of the variants are more easily transmitted. And finally, this concern of escape from vaccine protection is really what is driving a lot of the concern in the discussion. There's also a concern about the ability of the diagnostic tests to miss some of the variants, and that is less of a concern because the vast majority of the tests have more than one target in them.
I want to ask you about testing for this UK strain. In previous conversations here on the Roundup with other medical and disease experts, it's our understanding that the samples, nasal samples, for instance, have to be specifically tested for these different mutations in order to get either a positive or negative on if it's one of these three new strains. Is that correct? Like the standard nasal swab is not to test for this UK strain or the South African or Brazilian strains.
That's right. It's not. We don't really want right now. We want to be able to pick up any strain, right? We want the tests to identify everything. we're not really at the level where we can do a test and instantly say, well, you're carrying this strain or that strain. Fortunately, the vast majority of tests out there they're going to detect all of the variants. We know that some of the tests that have, let's say, three targets in them, one of those three targets might miss it. In fact, that test might actually be a good test for screening for the variants. There's a big distinction between making the diagnosis in a patient or a subject, and all of, the vast majority of tests are still very good at doing that.
I'm a little confused here still a little bit, doctor. So the standard tests that we're now using, people drive up, you get a nasal swab or a mouth swab. Are those capable of picking up these new strains?
Yes, they will pick it up. They won't tell you. Well, first of all, we don't have the answer is yes, they will detect these strains.
But you have to ask that of the test on the as you take it back to the lab.
So what the level of looking for new strains is really at the level of a surveillance research project, and that's what's happening around the country and, in fact, around the world where they have the capability. So we're pulling the positive samples that are coming from patients, and we're screening for the presence of these mutations and genetic changes by a number of methods. At the University of Miami, we have a lot of DNA sequencing firepower, and we're building up that capacity here.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Dr. Andrews, stick with us. David Andrews, clinical pathologist at the University of Miami, talking about the UK strain of the coronavirus. The CDC predicts that it will be the predominant strain in the United States by next month, by March, as a matter of fact. Zubin in Davie is on line two. Thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to ask, with regards to these new variants that are out there, in Dr. Andrews' opinion, would it be worth going back into lockdown?
Yeah, given the higher level of contagious nature of these strains, Dr. Andrews, what about protocols and restrictions?
I'm glad the question came up because that's coming up. Everyone is raising that question. What is needed is more attention to the guidelines that are already in place, rigorous attention to wearing masks, and attention to distancing. That's really what's needed right now. This question of lockdowns and broader expansion of those kinds of actions, that's a public health question. I really can't comment on that. But right now, what everybody can do is wear their masks without fail and apply appropriate social distancing.
On Wednesday, during a briefing of the White House COVID-19 response team, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci, was asked just this question about whether CDC safety protocols like wearing a mask, staying 6 feet apart, if those need to be expanded given the nature of these new strains. Here's what he said.
Right now, we don't have complete full compliance throughout the country of the fundamental public health measures that are necessary to prevent the spread. And I believe that if we do, we will be adequately addressing the transmissibility of these particular mutants.
So you're in good company there, Dr. Andrews, with advising folks to continue on with what the protocols have been. Do the current safety measures, do they go far enough, though? I know the question of double masking has come up, for instance. Maybe 6 feet needs to turn into 10 feet of social distancing, particularly with the UK strain and the higher level of contagion that it presents.
I don't think right now I don't know if we're going to extend from 6 feet to 10 feet. Again, these are beyond my scope of knowledge and expertise. I do like, intuitively, I like the idea of a double mask, particularly if you're vulnerable. If you're going to have to go out and be exposed, I'm like my elderly mother. She wears a double mask, and I she decided to do that on her own. So I think that's a good idea, particularly for vulnerable population.
Yeah. Are the symptoms of these new strains any different?
No. At this point, it doesn't look like it causes a different kind of disease. What one might imagine is that, and the concern would be that if in a group of people, one person is infected and they have close contacts, that there might be increased rates of transmission in small groups. But no, the actual the severity of disease does not yet appear to be different.
Coronavirus, as we've all become armchair epidemiologists in the last year, is describes a wide variety of illnesses, common cold, for instance. And, you know, for some of us in a regular winter, maybe we get a couple of different colds. If one had the, let's call it the conventional COVID-19 a few months ago or earlier in this pandemic, are they susceptible to catching this a new strain of COVID-19?
So you're asking if you had, are you referring to if you had the traditional old garden variety cold coronavirus?
No. If you had the what I guess we could call the garden variety COVID-19.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So one that would be, we can actually refer to that as, reference to the Wuhan variant, right?
The original, let's call it the Wuhan variant. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that's an official term, but the parental COVID-19 disease that we saw earlier last year. So that's a big question, and that's one of the concerns. That's part of this escape from protection. There's escape from vaccine and escape from natural protection. We don't know yet, and that is, of course, of concern. There is some evidence that has occurred in the Brazilian variant in a very remote but highly populous city called Manaus, I think it's M-A-N-A-U-S,
mm-hmm.
where the population had a high-level infection. Then this variant emerged, and the population has become vulnerable through increased spread of let's call that the Brazilian variant. That is a concern, and that's what we don't know that yet. That's happening.
We've got another caller in Hialeah, Chris, on line 3. Chris, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling in about the vaccine itself and the discussions about the hesitancy in Black and brown communities and even some of the healthcare workers about taking the vaccine because of the type of vaccine it is, the mRNA, how it programs your body to produce the spike that we're talking about in these vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot, and I work in mortuary transportation, so I'm around a lot of people. A big concern is people believe that this vaccine is mutating their body in some way because of this novel protein that it's making it produce. And I haven't heard anybody trying to address that and dispel that seems to be a big hesitation in a lot of the people that I speak to about it that aren't getting the vaccination, including caregivers and CNAs and whatnot. So
yeah, Chris, I appreciate the question. Yeah. Dr. Anders, I know you're in pathology, help us out here.
I do know a lot about that, and I can state with confidence that people really should not worry about this having any kind of a mutation effect on their own body or hurting them genetically in any way, shape, or form. That's not a concern for this, and that should not be a reason why someone holds back from getting the vaccine. I won't quote him, but Dr. Fauci is our biggest weapon right now against these genetic variants are for people to get vaccinated, for us to get vaccinations spread through the population.
How common is it for coronaviruses to mutate, Dr. Anders?
So the coronaviruses fall into the category of these viruses also called RNA viruses. And influenza is also an RNA virus. So the good news about coronavirus is even though we're seeing variants, it does not mutate as frequently or as aggressively as the influenza virus that we know every year we have to change the vaccines.
Right.
But all viruses mutate, and that's what we're seeing. It does mutate like all viruses, and fortunately not quite at the rate that, for example, another RNA virus like influenza mutates.
Dr. David Andrews has been our guest clinical pathologist at the University of Miami. Dr. Andrews, class dismissed, I think, here.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you sharing your expertise with us. Very important here, talking about the new strain of the coronavirus, strains, plural, the UK strain, according to the Centers for Disease Control, which has been found in Florida and South Florida, is expected to be the predominant strain of the coronavirus in the United States in the next month. We've got plenty more to come here on the South Florida Roundup. Enforcing the pandemic rules, like wearing masks, staying 6 feet apart. What have you seen when you're out and about? What are you practicing? 800-743-WLRN. Line up the calls and tweets now. 800-743-9576. at WLRN on Twitter. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Tens of thousands of complaints have been made over the past several months against restaurants, stores, and homes for not following the COVID-19 safety guidelines. People not wearing masks, people too close to one another, too many people gathered, all may be violations of the rules in place to try to slow the spread of the virus. The daily positivity rate remains around 10% in the region. As we just heard, a new, more contagious strain of the virus is making its way through the community, and the pandemic is stretching into its second year, giving plenty of folks pandemic fatigue. Are the rules still being followed where you go? How are they being enforced? What are you experiencing as you're out and about? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Talking about the protocols to protect yourself and others from the virus and the enforcement of those protocols. Richard Padgett is with us now, a Palm Beach County Code Enforcement Officer. Officer Padgett, welcome to WLRN. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm well. I hope you and your colleagues are well, too. So the Palm Beach County COVID-19 Business Complaints Dashboard, which anybody with an internet connection can go take a look at, finds almost 11,000 complaints lodged, most against restaurants and bars. What are the complaints about?
The complaints are typically for restaurants not enforcing the county facial covering mandate. As you stated, we have received almost 11,000 complaints. Most of them are predominantly about patrons or employees not wearing facial coverings inside businesses.
And the website also lists 78 notices of violation from the 11,000 complaints. A notice of violation, is that a ticket, a citation of some kind?
So a notice of violation is a term that we use in code enforcement. Of course, when the pandemic came about, there wasn't a standardized protocol for something of this nature. So we followed our code enforcement procedures, and we issued notices of violation to the property owners and the businesses and brought them before a special magistrate hearing where the businesses were subject to fines.
So 78 of those issued of the 11,000 complaints. As a code enforcement officer, what do you make of that?
So the goal of the COVID education compliance team is predominantly to provide education. Our goal is not to shut down businesses or interrupt anyone's business. We're just seeking voluntary compliance with the facial covering order. And, in doing so, we have visited, of those almost 11,000 complaints, with our staff doing their normal code enforcement duties along with assistance from other various county departments, we have been able to do a total of almost 9,000 site inspections of those complaints, of which 188 were written warnings that we've issued. And there were 27 business closures during the earlier phases of our operations.
Yeah. What helps guide your enforcement officers in the decision between education, warning, and notice of violation?
So right now, our directive from our chain of command is to issue warnings when we see a violation. And those are typically done either in person with the management for the business and also a follow-up written warning sent and documented. As of now, it seems to be working. A lot of the business owners understand. They're actually appreciative when they see us out because they do have a hard time from some customers, getting compliance themselves. So it helps them to see us out and see us visible. Yeah. To where they can say, look, this is, coming from the county and I have to abide by it.
Richard, how many code enforcement colleagues do you have out there doing this work?
Right now we have approximately, I would say 15 code officers, that do the dedicated, COVID education and compliance, after hours and on weekends. And in addition, we have, investigators from the contractor certification team that assist us. And during the day, we have our typical 30 code enforcement officers who are doing their typical duties enforcing county ordinances and also they're fielding COVID complaints that are received through the system throughout the day. So there's about 30 of us.
Yeah. So the usual code enforcement continues on, and this is kind of new work because of the pandemic, but no new resources necessarily in terms of personnel.
Not necessarily, okay. But we've been able to accomplish it without any interruptions to our normal code enforcement duties. Those haven't lapsed at all. They've actually kind of picked up a little bit, during in season where we have more people in South Florida. But we're still fielding the COVID complaints as well.
How are complaints about private homes handled?
Private homes, we typically wouldn't have any jurisdiction over. Ours is more so for the business aspect. In your private home, of course, you're afforded, you know, certain privacy, and we can't just walk into your home, whereas we can a public business.
Yeah, sure. I guess what I'm asking may be more like an Airbnb rental or something like that, for instance.
I haven't personally been to any of those. I don't know of any recent complaints on them. If we did receive a complaint on it, of course, we would. You know, within our legal means, go out and inspect the premises and, you know, maybe speak to the property owners and just educate them on, you know, best practices for operating their B&B.
Yeah. Richard, we appreciate your time. Richard Padgett is a Palm Beach County Code Enforcement Officer talking about enforcing those social distancing and wearing of masks there, particularly bars and restaurants in Palm Beach County. Richard, thanks for being with us. Some of your phone calls here. Jane in Hollywood, we want to hear from you. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi. I just want to tell you that as long as we have a governor who's taken away any real teeth or any mandates, he doesn't want to make any real mandates about wearing masks, really, too, if nothing is really changing and we're still spreading the disease. You go to the restaurants, they're packed. You see people not wearing a mask or pulling their mask down on their, putting it on their chin. But if there's no real fine, there's no real teeth in any of these rules about wearing masks, and that's why we're going to see the rates climbing and climbing, and I really want to know what's going to be done about it. Is DeSantis going to do anything different? Is he going to make any real penalties for anyone who's not complying? Because, as you said, the new strain is coming to Florida, and because we're an international city, we're going to be getting it, as you see, we're getting it pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and I'd like to know what's going to be done.
Yeah, Jane, the new strain is here, as a matter of fact, according to the epidemiology. Yeah, sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead, Jane.
Certain places, business as usual, there's no virus because everything is packed, the restaurants are packed, so there seems to be nothing being done about it.
Jane, stick around. We're going to hear from the Broward County mayor in just a quick moment, but I do want to pull in Wayne in Miramar, also wants to share his experiences. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call today. I just want to share as well, seeing sometimes the blatant disregard for the safety of the community, you know, in local shopping areas, you know, such as Walmart, Winn-Dixie, you know, and some of the other locations that you just do your basic shopping in. And just seeing some people walking around with no mask, and it's like there's no enforcement. And I agree with the previous caller that because there's no direction from the governmental level, it's confusing with Governor DeSantis, you know, saying wear a mask, but he's not enforcing wearing masks. So that's a confusing message. You know, the message needs to be stern and standardized,
yeah.
You know, that it is important to wear a mask. I work in healthcare, and just seeing all the sickness and illness, you know, because of really negligence from people who just still believe that it's not real. How can you not believe it isn't real when over 400,000 lives have been lost to this pandemic? So, you know, as I stated before, it's important just to wear a mask, you know, for the safety of your family, your friends, your neighbors, and everyone around you. That's all it takes. That's not hard.
Wayne, thank you for the call and the perspective there. Wayne, a healthcare worker in Miramar. Let's bring in Steve Geller, the mayor of Broward County. Mayor Geller, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. Thanks for your time today.
Good afternoon.
You heard from Wayne in Miramar. You heard from Jane in Hollywood earlier.
I agree with him.
Yeah, your response, right? I mean, the governor.
I have written to Governor DeSantis. My first day as mayor, which was in November, I wrote him. Still have never received a response.
What did you
write him? The governor has said that he doesn't want a statewide mask mandate because what works in Sop Choppy or Carabel would not work in Miami or Fort Lauderdale. Okay, if that's going to be your position, then give the locals the authority to make the decisions. But he won't let us do that either. He has taken away from us our ability to enforce the mask mandate on individuals.
So
we can still enforce it against businesses.
Right. So specifically, he has not allowed local agencies
to collect on the fines.
To collect on the fines of individuals. You can still enforce.
We can issue tickets, citations, and then theoretically, once the pandemic is over, we can try and enforce those citations, collect on them. But without any ability to collect now, people think we never are going to collect.
So, Mayor Geller, Broward County also has a dashboard. I mentioned the Palm Beach dashboard earlier with the code enforcement officer, Padgett. Broward County's enforcement dashboard, 17,000 complaints have been made in Broward County. Half of them have been found to be unsubstantiated. What does that tell you?
In some cities, 100% have been unsubstantiated. What bothers me more is the ones that are substantiated and they issue warnings. I heard the last code enforcement officer from Palm Beach talk about that. I have had this discussion with some of my mayors. Some of the mayors have said, well, in blank city, you know, we don't believe in issuing citations. We just think we can warn people. We have been in this crisis for a year. Everybody knows by now what they're supposed to do. Some people choose not to. I don't think warnings work anymore.
Yeah.
I think that if they close down a few businesses, the others will comply.
Mayor Geller, so 17,000 complaints in Broward County, according to the county data, 485 citations issued.
And most of those are old. If you look at them recently, I would say since September or so, the city of Hollywood is about the only city that is still issuing citations.
So are you saying that
Lauderdale does some?
Are you hearing then from elected officials who are telling you privately that they are willfully ignoring the enforcement aspect of these protocols?
Yes and no. They consider that their enforcement is by giving people a warning. I will tell you that the city of Fort Lauderdale, the county issued a curfew during the week between Christmas and New Year's, inclusive of both Christmas and New Year's, and we received a one-sentence reply from the city of Fort Lauderdale advising us that they would not enforce the order. Many of our mayors have told me that they're being nice. I have advised them that, you know, killing or hospitalizing the employees of the bars and restaurants or the patrons of the bars and restaurants in their cities is not being nice to them.
Do you think
they
that
disagree?
Fining businesses helps enforce mask mandates? If a diner at a business is not wearing his or her mask while not eating, and that person gets a citation, or that business then gets a citation for not enforcing that, does that help?
Yes. Do you recall the famous incident at the wharf
Mayor, there were multiple that made their videos on social media. The Wharf being a nightclub in Fort Lauderdale, highly visible instances on social media of the Wharf, this nightclub packed with people shoulder to shoulder, very few masks to be found.
I spoke with one of the owners there and he told me, well, they had ample space, but they weren't, but the people all wanted to congregate in one area and they were not wearing masks. And I said, well, you should have made them wear masks, and he told me, well, when we tried, after a couple of drinks, they told us to go obscenity ourselves.
So it begs the question, right?
If you had thrown out some of them, the rest would have gotten the message. And that's the same thing with businesses. If the businesses or the individuals know that you're not going to enforce it, then they will ignore it. If they find that you will enforce it, they will. And I must say, the Wharf has reopened and has been doing a wonderful job of enforcing it. Now, you must enforce it or people will just ignore it.
Do you think some businesses should be forced to close that are not enforcing these mask and social distance and crowd limitation requirements?
Yes, I think one or two would be sufficient. I don't want to close a single business in Broward County, not one. But I also don't want COVID to decimate the population of our county. So all I am asking is that the businesses enforce our orders. And if they do, the county will do everything we can to help them because they're being good corporate citizens. If they are ignoring our orders because they want every dollar that they can get, and they're permitting people to get infected in their business, then they are not being good corporate citizens.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Mayor, about jurisdiction here. Super Bowl weekend is coming up, right?
We have no jurisdiction over Tampa.
I understand. Fair enough, counselor. Yes, my geography is good enough to understand the difference between Broward County and Tampa. We can argue about Cuban sandwiches a little bit later between Miami and Tampa.
Yes,
but nonetheless, my jurisdiction question, though, is which agency in Broward County is running point on enforcement and where?
Well, it's the county, but you need to understand.
But what agency of the county? Is it BSO? The county is a large
BSO.
Group.
We have code enforcement.
Right. Okay.
But you need to understand the problem that we have. Only about 1% of Broward County is unincorporated.
Right.
Dade has large areas. Palm Beach has large areas. Broward doesn't. So we don't have law enforcement in the 31 cities throughout Broward. Those rely on their own law enforcement, which sometimes is BSO, but that's through contract. So we can enforce it aggressively in the 1% of the county that, you know, we control. But the sheriff has told us, like when we have had disputes with Fort Lauderdale, where we wanted him to go in and enforce it during the week between Christmas and New Year's, and Fort Lauderdale said, we're not enforcing it. Sheriff says, I'm not going to go into a city that has their own police department and tells us that they're not enforcing it.
Mayor Geller, remind us what the rules are now in Broward County.
You must wear a mask. You must social distance. By the way, I'm an attorney and but on my law office and on my mayoral signature blocks, each one of them says right over my name, please remember to wear a mask and social distance. Because it really is the thing that will help us. And stay at home a little more. I've been a hermit. I'm the mayor of the county, and I've been a hermit. I haven't eaten at a restaurant since March. I've ordered a lot of takeout.
Yeah.
But I haven't eaten at a restaurant in March. We minimize our shopping. Yet people are acting, what was that song, Party Like It's 1999 or something like that. You know, people are acting like there's no pandemic. Pandemic fatigue has absolutely set in, and that is horrible. It is endangering our community.
Mayor
Please
Geller,
wear a mask.
Steve Geller is the mayor of Broward County. Mayor Geller, nice to have you on the program again.
Thank you. And if I can just close by telling your listeners, please wear a mask and social distance. Thank you.
Appreciate it. The mayor of Broward County there, Stephen Geller. Still to come, the reputation and policing of South Beach. Another mayor will join us here on the South Florida Roundup. The mayor of Miami Beach talking about the reputation of South Beach. Your thoughts at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
The entertainment district has to go. We cannot suffer it any longer.
That was Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber on Monday after the armed robbery of a tourist and a shooting that left three people hurt last weekend.
Over the course of the pandemic, it has only gotten worse, as it seems like we are becoming even more of a magnet for people who come here with bad intentions.
This weekend, more police are expected to be patrolling the streets of South Beach. For 2 months, that was the strategy, which led to hundreds of arrests and police seizing almost two dozen guns. The stepped-up law enforcement comes as the county commission has been stepping up restrictions on loud music and sidewalk cafes in the area. So what do you make of the reputation of South Beach these days and the city efforts to reform the district? What does it mean when a city commissioner talks about South Beach's current environment attracting a certain kind of demographic? Talk about that now. 800-743-WLRN, our phone number, 800-743-9576. Mayor Dan Gelber, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. Nice to have you, sir.
Hey, how are you? How are you?
Doing well. My best to you and your family. What will be the police presence this weekend?
Well, we're increasing the number of police. We're getting some help from the county, and we're also increasing the hours that the police are on duty. So instead of maybe an 8-hour day, maybe a 10 or 11-hour day, or whatever it is, to increase the force size. We're going to really try to have as much of a show of police as we can in this area, which has only become more problematic during the pandemic.
In December and January, there was a pilot program that put more police on the ground in South Beach. Why did that end?
Well, I think they wanted this. First of all, it's expensive, and it's also, you know, we only have so many police officers. I think they were trying to, they've been experimenting with different models, trying different things, reaching out to the county. I think, you know, look, for me as the mayor and as a lifelong resident, the only way we're going to be able to survive in this thing is if we really do flood with police. But that can't be the long-term answer, because if all we're ever doing is chasing bad guys in our entertainment district, then something's terribly wrong there. That's the problem.
Yeah, you called this area ungovernable. Is the executive branch of the city government, what responsibility does the city government have in the existence of that condition?
Well, look, I think you have to step back for a second and understand that almost all of the crime you're talking about in this area is from guests on guests. It's from visitors who come here to exploit, and the victims tend to be guests as well. Our residents are rarely, if ever, a perpetrator, and rarely a victim, and in fact, maybe workers are. So, you know, we are a county asset in the sense that this is why people come to stay in hotels, and so the county and the region and the state gets an enormous amount of economic benefit from this. For us, though, we are now in the midst of dealing with what is, you know, certainly not the benefit of it, and it's just not worth it to us. So, for me, as a mayor, it's very simple. If we can't get control of this, we're just going to really begin to shut it down in ways that I think, you know, the county and the region are going to be unhappy about. We cannot allow somebody to pull out an automatic weapon, in the middle of an entertainment district, in the middle of any area, but certainly in this area, it's absurd. So for me, I've been trying since I've been mayor to come up with different policing strategies, but also trying to come up with ways that we can reanimate this place and reimagine it, not as an entertainment district, but as an Art Deco cultural district. If you've seen places around the world where it's a cultural experience, where there's museums and restaurants and galleries and shopping, rather than just a place to go and party very hard and drink as late as you want and do whatever you want to do. That can't be what happens.
We're speaking with Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber about South Beach, the reputation, the violence that has been seen in South Beach. Your questions, your comments, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Let me bring in WLRN reporter Danny Rivero. Yeah, what has been the city commission response to the violence and some of the bad behavior that the mayor has talked about?
Right. So this is a subject that's been a topic of discussion for a while, right? But recently there has been some movement on it, more proposals brought forth. One of them you mentioned was kind of the program to bring in increased policing in the area that recently expired. It looks like this weekend we're going to see more police coming back on the beat. The commission did set up what they call new codes of conduct for outdoor cafes. That's like, think of Ocean Drive. There's a lot of sidewalk cafes. But basically, it's guidelines for the business owners that they need to keep things under control to the specifications of the city. And if the businesses don't abide by those guidelines, then the city will be able to take their right to have that seating on the sidewalk cafes away, because it's not not a right for those businesses to have that, and they're using that as a mechanism to try to encourage better behavior. And there's also talk of changing sound ordinances and potentially the hours that alcohol is for sale. One of the tough things for any lawmaker in all this is that, you know, take for instance the violence that we saw last weekend. This is not necessarily stuff that happened at night after hours. You know, right. this happened broad daylight in the middle of the street. And like the mayor said, a lot of it is visitors. And, the economy of a lot of South Florida, and in particular Miami Beach, thrives on visitors. And, you know, it's a pretty hard thing to legislate. But I can say that the city is looking at doing a variety of things.
Danny Rivera with us, WLRN reporter. Mayor Dan Gelber, the mayor of Miami Beach, with us. Let's say hello to Kaylin, who is calling in. Thanks for giving us a buzz here on the South Florida Roundup. Kaylin, welcome. You're on the radio.
Hi, everyone.
Go ahead.
I'm a South Beach resident. I grew up in Miami. I've lived here my entire life. I do live alone, and I'm a college-age female. And the violence that we saw last weekend, actually, the gunshots I heard from my apartment, because I live right above the restaurants that contributed to that. And I do have to say the businesses with the sidewalk business are massive contributors to a lot of the violence and a lot of the crowd that is hanging around. And by crowd that is hanging around, I just mean amazing amounts of people, all hours of the night. And these businesses being open and allowing these kinds of congregations are definitely where all of the violence is happening. But being able to go for a run at night by myself on the beach was possible about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. And now I am at the point where I won't do it because I can't. Because as a single female running around by yourself at night, it is, frankly, incredibly dangerous.
Kaylin, I appreciate you sharing that important perspective with us. Thanks for letting us know, as a South Beach resident, what it's like. Mr. Mayor, what do you hear there from Kaylin? And frankly, as you look longer term, what are the tools at your disposal?
Yeah. Well, first of all, she's absolutely right. And it breaks my heart that I have to hear that. And it gets me pretty angry because, you know, that really is happening. So for me, I think one of the things we have to do is, first of all, she mentioned a couple of things that we really are addressing. There's a business model for some businesses that caters to the lowest common denominator, that likes big crowds, the big drinks, the loud music in the street, the congregation in areas where it only leads to the kind of misbehavior or worse that you've seen. So we, you know, for about a year or two, we have been doing this code of conduct where we are getting rid of the hawking, we're getting rid of these, you know, 2-for-1 drink specials or these rip-offs or things like that. I mean, we have to elevate it. And the truth is, we have a lot of operators who would love a better experience.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, Mr. Mayor, about what does that mean when you're talking about elevating an experience? We had one city commissioner, Danny Rivera, tell you, you know, that looking at a demographic, I mean, these sound like code words of some kind, are they?
It's not a code word. When you have a promoted party that advertises for 5,000 people and you only have capacity for 400, and literally hundreds or thousands of people show up with nothing and nowhere to go and they end up in the street, that's an experience we don't want. When you have, people hawking when you walk by Ocean Drive, trying to pull you into a restaurant,
yeah.
You know, one of the problems we're having is that there's been a race to the bottom because we haven't, I think, adequately set a floor. And, you know, we're not Las Vegas. We
Mayor
have
Gelber,
lots of other things. other things to offer.
We got to leave it there. I know we're going to return to this conversation here on Fridays as well as often here on WLRN. Mr. Mayor, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. Mayor Dan Gelber. And Danny, always nice to have you. Thanks for sharing your reporting on this as well.
Thanks, Tom.
Danny Rivera with WLRN. That is the South Florida Roundup here this week. It is produced by Denise Royal and Andrea Perdomo. Engagement editors Katie Lepre, Lance Dixon, digital editor, Terrence Shepard, news director, Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. The director of radio programming at WLRN is Jason Zabka. Radio operations and the program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling WLRN. Thanks for listening, certainly, to the South Florida Roundup. Thanks for tweeting us as well. Don't forget to find a podcast of this program each and every week on your podcast app, and be sure to follow us on social media. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.